Greetings, race community. Brent coming in live with today's guest, Rita Walters, who serves as Vice President of Development and Alumni Engagement at Montclair State University. Welcome, Rita.
Thank you, Brett. It is so good to be here.
Well,
thank you so much for having me.
It's great to see you. And I was really looking forward to this because we have spent a fair amount of time together over the years. I feel like we've built a great rapport and trust. And then I was thinking about it and I'm like, but I don't really know that much about Rita's story. She's amazing that I feel like we're talking about the future and the vision and the new idea.
Right.
Sometimes at the expense of, you know, how we got here in the first place. So today is your day, allegedly your first time on a podcast. I can't believe it, but you're going to.
Yes, it's true. It's true. I was today years old.
Years old. All right. Well, let's go back to when you were today minus a few days old. Right. Tell me about junior year of high school. Who was that, Rita? Mm-hmm. What was you into? And what led you to Fairleigh Dickinson University?
Yeah. Oh, goodness. I love this question. So I was Rita Walters, Rita Williams then. Actually, I was Atiyah Sinclair. That was my stage name all through high school. I changed it when I was maybe in eighth grade or so.
Wait,
and told my
down.
Mom and family I would not answer to anything else.
Time out. All right. We're going back to eighth grade. I know I asked about you. Well, tell me about eighth grade.
That's true. Right. So eighth grade, I decided I wanted to be an actress, and I was always sort of memorizing things and parts and being super, super dramatic. I think only in the way that a 13-year-old girl can. And I decided to change my name. So Rita is just, Atiyah is just Rita spelled backwards, right? I probably wasn't that imaginative, although I thought I was. And so I changed it to Atiyah, and there was an actress, an African-American actress named Madge Sinclair. And she was Jamaican, and she was on Trapper John MD. It's like way, way probably before your time. But I said, oh my God, I love this last name, Sinclair. So I changed my name to Atiyah Sinclair, and my best girlfriend made me a t-shirt that said it, and that was it. That was all I needed. And I went from Rita to Atiyah. Really, actually, even in college, there were people who still referred to me as Atiyah.
So, all right, Atiyah. So fun fact, Madge Sinclair was the voice of Simba's mother in The Lion King.
That's right. You know, that is true. I kind of like forgot about that. Yeah.
And for those.
But anyway, so she was my favorite.
Off of Wikipedia, don't think that I have some kind of crazy long tail knowledge of right. Hollywood. But anyways, okay, so Tears right. Sinclair, and you want to be right. An actress, and
exactly. So I went to Arts High School, I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, and Arts High was and is a school of performing arts. It's actually the oldest in the country. So I got accepted into the theater program, and we were off to the races at least for 4 years of high school. And one of the things, you know, I know you're really interested in philanthropy in the sense of, for me, sense of community and giving back and how that all started. And it started with a walkathon when I was in high school. And I did that and I got it sort of corralled a friend to help me with it and went to all of my little neighbors in my community and said, would you pledge like a dime, or some person gave a penny, but like, you know, for every kilometer that I walked. And many people said yes. And so I understood it wasn't like I got over that fear of no pretty quickly. One, because when you want to be an actress, you hear no a lot and you can't take it personally. And I realized that people are super generous. Equal gifts, not equal gifts, but equal sacrifice.
I love it. We've done almost 200 episodes. And I think this might be the first time anyone has told a story about losing a penny.
Oh, right. It's true. I'm probably the oldest person though, maybe. I don't know.
So it's absolutely not. But so then how does this sort of exposure to nonprofit, desire to be an actress, lead you to Fairleigh Dickinson? What were you thinking when you made that decision? And just tell me about your time there.
You know, so as I mentioned, I grew up in Newark and I knew I could not go, our family could not afford for me to go out of school, out of state. And I wanted a university experience. And I didn't want to go to Rutgers for no other reason other than lots and lots of my friends were going to Rutgers, and I always thought of myself as a trailblazer. So I wanted to go somewhere that like none of my friends had attended yet. And Fairleigh Dickinson, that was true. Plus, it was on a bus route. So there was a way for me from my apartment to actually get to Teaneck, New Jersey from Newark, New Jersey. It made it quite easy. So that's how I ended up at Fairleigh Dickinson. And I was an accounting major. I like end of theater and all of those things. There was a woman who's a working actress, and I can't recollect her name now, but she came to my high school when I was a senior, and we had like hardwood floors, and she came in. She was beautiful and super dramatic, and she had, I still remember she had this kind of long cape on over her clothes and with a staff, and she banged on the hardwood floor and she said, "Be prepared to starve." And I thought, "Ooh, been there, done that, got the t-shirt. I think I want to do something else, you know?" So that's how I changed. I didn't know accounting, but I met a boy my first year who I've been married to now for 37 years, who was an accounting student. And I thought, oh, I guess I'll just follow him around, you know? So that's how I became an accountant. And I spent 13 years doing that.
So you went from be prepared to starve to follow the
Right.
money. Follow the
Follow
money.
the money, right? Hang a shingle. I was just like, or so I thought.
And
Yeah.
so 13 years at the beginning of your career working in accounting.
Yes. Yeah, I did.
And you spent some time at, I mean, just tell me about the highlights of that work.
Yeah.
What you think about, what stands out?
Well, you know, actually, what really starts, I first started at Mutual of New York as a financial analyst or some type of, I think a financial specialist, I think was the title, and then to American Express travel related services. And I actually love that. And I made really good friends there here in New York City. And then so we purchased a house and all of these things in South Jersey. And so I moved to, had a baby, and then I moved to the Willingboro School District and became the accountant for the district. And I spent almost 8 years there. But it was there that I was able to do a host of things. I mean, you probably don't know this, but American Express at that time actually had a choir. And I know this because I was in the choir, right, for American Express. And it was this, we sang for like the holiday season. And I was so proud, like, oh, wow, I'm going to be in the choir. My boss would go looking for, like, where were you? I'm like, oh, choir rehearsal. He's like, I probably can't curse on the podcast, but he was like, because this is New York, so of course he cursed at me. He was like, what the F are you doing in a choir? So he was lovely. I loved him, and I took it all in good humor because he meant it that way. But I said, but you have to come see me. We're going to sing on December, whatever date it was. And when we got there, all of a sudden, because it was American Express and they believe in excellence, it was all these professional singers. So I went to open my mouth and we were completely drowned out by these amazing, amazing professional singers. But somewhere in my house, there is a VCR with me singing like in the second row, you know, Come By Here, My Lord, or something, whatever the hymns were. So.
So you're able to marry the art and the accounting.
Right together.
I love it. And
Yeah.
so that's a pretty clear career path, though. You're doing accounting at American Express. You make a move. You're outside of Philly,
Yeah.
really doing
Yeah.
cool. And then what is the on-ramp into the world of philanthropy? And do you have
Right.
exposure to it at all along the way, similar to your high school walkathon?
Yeah. So actually, yes. So I always believed in, because it really was kind of instilled in me through my community, sort of always believed in giving back. So I had a breast cancer scare when I was quite young, still in my 20s. And I decided to, like I said, oh, I want to raise money for the American Cancer Society. And I didn't know much about it at all. I ended up not having cancer, but I still wanted to do this. And I called up the sort of a local chapter, and I said, I'm going to invite all of my friends over. We're going to have a cocktail party, and all the money we raise will go to you. If you can just send someone over so they can accept the check or cash or whatever it is, that would be great. And they did. And her name was Olive Holmes. She passed away several years ago, but we became fast friends. And she was a school teacher by training, and she was a volunteer at the American Cancer Society. And she lived in that particular community, which was Willingboro at that time. So that was my first exposure. And then she got me involved in a lot of nonprofits as a volunteer. And I absolutely loved it in a very sort of formal way. And then at Willingboro, we started, which I think was, right, I think I'm true, sort of correct about this, but we started the first foundation for education excellence at the Willingboro School District. Because I sort of understood that I worked with so many teachers, and I found out they were buying so many things with their own money, and they weren't making sort of a ton of money at all. And Willingboro is a suburban district, but also a district that still had high need, right? And so I recognized in the students my own upbringing, and to a great extent my own self. And I was so awed by these teachers who were like, "Oh, I bought tissues and crayons and pencils and jackets and food and all of these things." I said, "But I wonder if we can do something to raise money so we can give out these little mini grants that then you can do some fun things." And I enlisted the school, the township treasurer, because we work with the treasurer as a public entity. I elicited our accountant, who was the outside CPA firm, and maybe one or two other people. And we put together a little community, and we start putting on events, because that's what I knew how to do. And we raised a couple of thousand, when I was there, a couple of $1,000 that we would then turn around and, with a little short, little one pager, give out grants to teachers to use for things, for extra things. So I was able to incorporate those two things together. And there, because I had what was called a senior position, I had a lot more flexibility. Unlike when I was trying to be in the choir, I had a lot more flexibility to try to do some of the things that I wanted to do. Eventually, after almost 8 years I spent there, I left. I had gotten really ill, and I was lamenting one evening with a group of women who were on a local board, Bring Back Main Street. By this time, I lived in a different township. And it was Bring Back Main Street, of which I was still on the board. And these women, I was like, "Oh, I think I want to do something more meaningful." I didn't even have the language for what it was. And there was a woman who was on the board of Big Brothers Big Sisters. She was the president of the board, actually. And she said, "Well, I'm on the board of Big Brothers Big Sisters. I think we need like a special events coordinator." And I was like, "Oh, I'll do that." And that's how it actually began. I started doing that. I quit my job, and then I did this, and it was part-time, $9 an hour. I'll never forget that. And that's what I did.
Amazing. I mean, it's just also a reminder, like, what if that friend hadn't said that thing that day?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We all need others.
And so that was your on-ramp into the world of development. And then my understanding is you spent a period of time in the Baltimore area.
Then I moved to Baltimore. Yeah, our family moved and relocated to Baltimore.
And so tell me about the progression there and maybe some of the different insights from different nonprofit verticals, if you will. A
Oh,
lot
I love that. Yeah,
of
yeah.
that exposure to, public common creation, religious, et cetera, services.
Yeah. Right. I love this question. So from New Jersey, I stayed in sort of direct service nonprofits. So I went to another nonprofit, Baltimore Reads, which is a nonprofit literacy organization. And once again, I worked in places that reflected my own upbringing in a real powerful way. So I felt I was, it became almost instantly a calling, right? And it was really easy to see. It reflected in those that we served, and using the language of service. And I started to move up from a coordinator to a special events manager, and eventually once again to Big Brothers Big Sisters, but this time obviously in Maryland, where I became the individual giving officer. It was a brand new position, and it was a brand new position, and it gave me all of the creativity and the spontaneity, and quite frankly, the leadership, because I was a leader in in my first career. But that was a bit unknown to my new career. They didn't recognize I had this other sort of spent, 13 years in this other thing. So this newest position, and this is really, I think, goes to your question, it was really an opportunity to really carve my own way and really fail forward and sort of teach myself a lot of things. It was a very small shop. And my the CEO at that time, her name was Robin. She was amazing because she allowed you, and Lois is my direct supervisor, and both of them, these women, they allowed me to have the and the, res the respect they gave me to have the flexibility to trust my instincts. And I think that was really for, and as a manager now, I try to really do that for others, but to really trust my instincts. Sometimes it worked. Lots of times it did not work. I didn't know what I didn't know. But it was always ask one more question. And when I learned to not be embarrassed by what I didn't know, to ask one more question, it is amazing at how many people will come to your rescue. So that was there. And then I really was trained. I mean, really trained. I think it's one of the best fundraising shops in the country. It's Johns Hopkins University. And I spent 5.5 years there as a senior associate, doing major gifts for the School of Arts and Sciences. And it's where I met my mentor. Her name is Sylvia Eggleston Ware. May her memory always, always be a blessing. But she really taught me about the business, the things to do, and also the things, not to do. And after that, I
Rita,
recognize, oh, I'm sorry, please.
let me ask. Most people listening aren't gonna, if they had had the opportunity to work with Sylvia, tell me about the before and after. Tell me about Rita day one versus Rita at the end of that experience and what you wish every other person listening could get exposure to that will maybe help them become a little bit better of a fundraiser.
God, this is a great question. So I would say Rita day one was still inexperienced, a little bit shy. I had had a I had a limited worldview, as many young people who come into this business, right? And one of the things of working for a sort of a really, it wasn't such a large university as it was a very diverse university coming in. You may be tempted to really try to be someone else, to sort of fall in line, look to your left, look to your right. See what others are doing and try to mimic that. Right. And as good of an actress as I thought I was, you are better at being yourself. And I think part of our business really requires, and this is what I learned, that it requires authenticity. And it's the one thing that you cannot fake. And when you can relax into that power, I think you can do an amazing, amazing job on behalf of the institution you serve. And that's the difference of Rita year one and Rita year 5.5 when I
But
left Hopkins.
how did that manifest? If I'm a donor, how did I experience Rita in year five versus year one with that appreciation and acceptance of authenticity?
Right. I think what that person, I hope what they would have found was a level of confidence and preparedness for the visit, right? So really knowing all you can about the person for whom you're going to meet. Don't come across creepy. We don't want that. But I really to be prepared and ready to ask questions and to be really intellectually curious about their life, about their story in an authentic way. To really, to use this language that's not common, I think, for us in a secular setting. But to use the language and feel the language of love, like, to really want to know more about that person, about everything that matters to them. And that takes deep listening, and you really have to train yourself to do that. And so every time the question comes, because they also want to get to know you as well, right? And so you're looking for the commonalities, right? And body language, matters as well. So you're leaning in, you're giving eye contact, And you're being, you're being authentic. So try to rest well. It may sound silly. Try to drink lots of water, right? Try to exercise because you really want to have both your posture physically, right, and your mind mentally to be present. To be present.
I love it. And that's probably the first time that anybody has shared that specific advice. And I think your point is just look, general health and wellness will be felt and by both you and by the other party. And that resonates for sure. Tell me about your move to, let's talk about MICA. You're at the Maryland Institute College of Art, which is when we first met, I believe. I'm almost
Yes, yep. It
yeah.
is. That's true.
Other example of kind of bringing together your maybe art, background in art, but also your well-established career in development. And this was a time when you were the VP. So just tell me about sort of taking that step up to the senior leadership table and any lessons learned during that time.
Oh, lots of lessons there. So before I arrived at MICA, I had spent time at the Washington National Cathedral where I was their chief development officer as well. So lots of great things I learned there about the Washington, D.C. market, about just so many different people across the nation because it was a national fundraising shop, right? So we worked in all 52 states. So all 50 states, sorry. So one of the things that going to MICA, which was really a dream come true, I loved MICA. It was a brand new president. And again, I do want to put this on record because I think this is also important. And so I have really applied for one job since I arrived in Maryland. And every other position, I either received a phone call or a recommendation to have a conversation. And so your reputation means everything. So I'd say to folk, guard it like you guard your money, right? To really preserve and to be a person of integrity, because that's our bread and butter in this work. We represent whatever organization it is that we're representing. We are the face of that organization in a real external way. And the integrity and the reputation to follow through us to the donor or and or the prospect. So I just want to sort of set that aside because it's also very important to success, I think. So I arrive at MICA at the behest of a board member and have a great conversation with the brand new president, and we decide that we want to be partners in this work. It's very an outstanding art school, and it had an outstanding reputation in Baltimore City. And so one is, and I had a large team, the largest team I had ever worked with. And I made a bunch of stumbles in the beginning, because one of the first things I did, I had really built a team at the Washington National Cathedral. We got a lot of great success. And when I got to MICA, I thought I was starting at day four, not recognizing they had a long-term president over 20-something years. They had a long-term vice president, right? And then they had another president who was no longer there. Oh, he had spent only a short time there. And here I come. And I'm coming off of a very successful run at a previous institution. And I didn't recognize, and it was a rookie mistake. I did not recognize I needed to do the work, to do the work around relationships, to do the work around building, to do the work around trust.
Can you be more specific and really, if you could go back and talk to yourself on day one, you'd say, do more of this, less of this.
Oh my
What
goodness, yes. Because I've had that conversation for the other organizations I've gone to. And I would say, do the work around getting to know your senior staff and every single person on that staff and what they truly care about. Because this is a human enterprise. And if people are going to do their best or better than their best, they have to want to follow your lead. And they cannot do that unless they trust the process. And again, I came in, I thought, like, hi, I'm Rita Walters. We're going to do all of this stuff, blah, blah, blah. And like, whoa, 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 you're at 12 o'clock. They're still at 3 o'clock. What does that mean? Where does that reconciliation happen? And so you have to bring people along. And sometimes that may take longer than you would like, but I think it pays dividends in the long run.
Well said. And thank you for the candor. It sounds like it was a real challenge and growth period.
Absolutely.
All right. So catch me up from then to now. We've
Yeah,
obviously
it's
had to stay in touch over the years,
right.
and definitely want to make sure we have time to focus on your work today and your vision for the future as well.
Yes, great. So quickly, so how we got to know one another at MICA, one of the things that I really love is being an early adopter. And I'm one of those folks that if I get a cold call, I am interested, right? I want to hear the whole thing. I think you're always learning. And when your group called and said, I think you invited me to the first, I think I did. I think I went to the first RAISE conference because it was in Boston. Is RAISE in Massachusetts?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So it was exciting and lots of energy. And I thought, oh my God, I want to bring all of this energy because I attended alone. I wanted to bring all of this energy back. And I thought what you were doing and what you continue to do is really cutting edge. And to move into, we're like, hey, predictive modeling, how can we get better at this? And this is before the language of AI in a real sort of intentional way. You guys were already there. And it's just been, it was just a great ride. And to get gift officers excited about the work was easy with your shop and with your colleagues who they were all just amazing and high energy. And it was really a great experience for us, there.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, Rita. And that really was the catalyst that ultimately became the podcast, because we're thinking about how do we bring people together in person, but then also how do we sort of create a platform for leaders like you who, you and your peers, you spend so much time doing discovery work and listening to other and asking about their stories. And I didn't see a place to learn about your stories, to understand your journey. And even though we've had so many energetic, inspiring conversations over the years, we're 30 minutes in and I feel like I already know you so much better. And so it's like it was just a great forcing function to go from the in-person conference to then try to create this platform virtually. And my hope is that someday, 2 years from now, you call me up and you say, "Hey, Brent, somebody just I just hired somebody and they said that they heard my story on the podcast and XYZ resonated and that led them to reach out." I just had that happen the other day.
Oh my
At
God, I love that.
a summit, a gentleman told me that he had met, listened to one of the episodes, followed up with that person. They stayed in touch, and he just joined that individual as his AVP development. And I honestly like shed a tear. It made me so
I
happy.
love that. Oh my God, I so love that. Now I think I need to be on better behavior, but
No. It's all good. Like you said, authenticity. People want authentic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anybody listening is going to feel like they know you a little bit better for
Right.
sure. Yeah, look, when we first met, what did we see? We saw that there had been this massive shift to digital platforms where historically we tracked all this information in our database and we were just playing whack-a-mole trying to get, more data in there. And then once it got in there, it wasn't particularly user-friendly or accessible, and it wasn't necessarily helping fundraisers build authentic relationships in the way that we think is possible. We saw, the engagement happening on Facebook, the way that people were freely sharing their career updates, on LinkedIn, and then mashed up with what we did know about them based on their giving history and engagement and the unique information institution could paint a more complete picture. I mean, every CRM company talks about a 360 degree view, and zero have ever delivered a 360 degree view. Excellent. And so, but can we do better than the status quo? Yes. And I think the journey we've
Absolutely.
been on, which is where are the different pockets of data about Rita, about Brent, about all of our constituents? We're never going to get to 360 degrees, but can we get better by bringing it together? Now, as you just highlighted, with AI, so much of that data foundation that has been built, we can actually activate even simpler and more easily. That's why I like to feel like we're at this whole new phase where we can learn from everything that we've worked on over the years, but just take it to a whole new level with a laser
Right.
focus on philanthropy.
Right. Brent, you're absolutely right. And we can get to scale, right? I mean, even like, and I talked about Hopkins earlier. When I left there, I don't know what it is now, obviously, but there were 200 frontline gift officers, right? I mean, my shop, we have three frontline, now that's going to change, but we currently, we have three frontline gift officers and we have 150,000 alumni,
right.
150,000. And so how do we get to scale? And they're giving us tells all the time,
for
but they're
example,
not necessarily in RE.
You've got 52 of those 150,000 alumni that have gotten C-level jobs in the last 90 days based on the data we're seeing in Evertrue. All right.
Wow.
50
right.
of your alumni just got the biggest promotion in their career.
Right.
That is an opportunity for you all to connect with them, to engage them, to hear their story the way I'm hearing
exactly.
your story.
Exactly.
Elevated.
Right.
Ultimately, not all of them are going to be interested in getting engaged philanthropically or
right, of course.
But
right.
Some of them will. And if we can give you that timely signal, as we say, of why to reach out, that is
exactly. It's a game changer. It's a game changer. Right. Right.
Yeah.
And it allows us to just cover much more ground than we can, you know, just sort of one person at a time.
I think you're right. And so it's a combination of how do we filter through all of that noise to,
right.
You do have three fundraisers, right? Plus a small team of other folks that are doing their
oh,
own.
Right. Work. Exactly. Right.
But we're not going to get to 150,000, but can we get to the first 1,000 and then the second 1,000 more?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And rank them, right? Yeah.
Right. And that ranking is changing every day as more data generates.
Exactly.
That's where we've got to, but I feel like at the same time, and this is one of the big issues that we're constantly talking about with our team is in the end, if I had to choose between better ranking and more personalized, authentic outreach, I'm going to pick the latter all day of the week because every day
right.
we could spend
right.
way too much time over ranking and scoring and not enough time actually saying, hey, Rita, I saw you got
right.
the new. I'd love to schedule a time. We're proud
right,
of you.
Exactly. Congratulations. Exactly. Congratulations. Right. Right.
I love
That's
that.
Absolutely correct. Yeah.
So tell me though about in your context, because you are, I feel like based on our discussions, you see tremendous potential in your community. I know you have data that backs that up, but we are
right.
at the beginning phase of really going and taking it to the next level.
Right. I think our team, so one, we have a great team. I mean, a really, really good team. I'm very experienced. Unlike most shops, we have a very seasoned team. Our average longevity is probably, I don't know, a decade almost. Like, you know, we have 34 people all together on the team doing various functions. But for us, we're at this point now, we're not in a campaign currently, right? We're in what I am calling like, that we like we need to be ready so we don't have to get ready, right? And so we're at the stage now where we must put all of the building blocks in place, including training, including leveraging AI to the best of its ability, right? And including getting that excitement and thrill of doing things new and different. And so I'm trying to, you know, whether it's at a conference or otherwise, learn as much as I can, work with and explore as many partnerships and relationships as I possibly can so we can put both an internal team together, right? So that, you know, the normal rank, positions, but also external partners who we can be hand in glove. Because, that, you know, we have a new president who is outstanding. I mean, a big vision, you know, he comes from ASU. Need I say any more? Right, because we know that is the home of innovation, and he brings all of that depth and richness and brilliance, you know, alongside of him. And so we are challenged as his, you know, sort of as his cabinet, and not just in development, but in all facets of Montclair State University, to be the very best that we can be for those we serve. Right, because we sort of put that at the top of the flagpole here. And so we're in this posture as a team and as a development team and as a senior team to make sure that we're looking high and low for who are the who for who those next partners are, and who do we get to work with to help move us forward, who understand us and understand what we're trying to accomplish.
I love it. And you shared in our questionnaire, we don't read through the questionnaires on the podcast. A couple of things you said really stood out, but one was, and I feel like it reflects your art, your accounting, your development work, where you said you think we're going to see more human-centered AI that will still need the human intervention, but we're nuanced. We need both. We need machine learning that will allow us to do first things first. That person got promoted. We know that that's a key inflection point. Let's reach out, but also let's make it human to human, right? And let's have the human be a check to maybe the increasing automation. And I think that is exactly aligned with how we've been approaching this at Evertrue.
Yeah, I think we're right on course to do that. You're absolutely right. And so I'll tell you one little thing, if I may. I know we don't have a lot of time left, but quickly, there was during COVID, I was at Union Theological Seminary as their vice president, and we try, like many organizations did, we tried to bring our alumni close by Zoom, and many of them took advantage of that. And what we discovered, or what I discovered, was there were people. It was Thanksgiving was coming up. And there were people who were not going to be able to spend that time with their family. And so I said, well, why don't we have, you can sign up, it's all voluntary, but for 20 minutes, there's a 20-minute conversation. If you would like to be engaged in a 20-minute conversation with another alumni or faculty member, whomever signed up, part of that community, though, right? So there would be a commonality, right? Sign up for this. Well, I signed up myself too. And I can tell you, I had pots and dishes and plates and everything all over the place. And I ended up spending an hour on the phone with this gentleman. But when you think of this, the season, I won't say Thanksgiving in particular, but this season of Thanksgiving, right? That, and, beyond the harvest time when we all sort of want to come together, what I recognized was that people are lonely. So no matter how much we can know about them, we may be the first person to that person who was just promoted to say congratulations. We may be. You just never know. And just that one congratulations, good job. I would love to come have a cup of coffee with you to celebrate. It can
But
be all you need to change.
I think the opportunity for development, it's very similar to just relationship building in general. We all have friends that say happy birthday on our feeds, right? And we also have the friends that call and say happy birthday, right? Or that send you the voice. And I think that's where the easier it is to do the perfunctory happy birthday, the more it means when somebody really goes out of their way to say,
You're
Rita,
right.
it's your birthday. I wanted to call, wish you the best. I'd love to know what your highlight of the last year is and what you're most looking forward to next year. It's not
Right.
that different. It's happy birthday, but that I think for development can
Right.
be the difference between seven-figure donations, right? Because
Yeah.
you took the time, you were persistent, you were authentic. And that's what we're trying to really, like you said before, just scale. As we
Yeah,
conclude,
you're 1,000% right. Yeah.
I do want to give you an opportunity for highlighting. You've highlighted the tenure of your team, which is rare in the industry.
It is. Yeah, we're lucky.
But also, are you hiring? And for folks that might be interested in learning more, like what should they be keeping tabs on as you go from ready to in campaign, let's say.
So thank you. So yes, and thank you for this great little I have a chance to do a pitch here. So we are hiring. So please take a look at our website. You can find me easily, and I'm on all of the social media sites. So if you just want to drop me a line on LinkedIn, I would be happy to get it to the right manager within my department. So there would be sort of gift officer opportunities available. There would be back office opportunities available, IT opportunities available. Some things are already started. They're in progress. There's an accountant position available. So please reach out. Montclair State University, look us up. We're not the sort of school you may have imagined. We are the second largest university in the state of New Jersey. We have a dynamic president. We have an amazing future. We are HSI. We are a PBI. It is a wonderful, wonderful place to work. And it is a beautiful, beautiful campus. And a train goes there. So all of those things.
Nailed the pitch. Not your first time doing that. Well done. And let's conclude with I don't know, thoughts from Mr. Rogers and how that shaped your work.
Right. Mr. Rogers said, always look for the helpers. Always look for the helpers. And I think that in doing this work, we have a chance to really help shape the philanthropic dreams and intentions of those who align with the vision of the institution you represent. So be the helper. And that does require authenticity, truth, intellectual curiosity, and friendship. And to make people a little less lonely.
I have so been looking forward to this. I know we had to kind of reschedule to make it
Oh,
work.
it's perfectly fine. This is so fun. So thank you. Thank you,
Thank
thank you,
you. I
thank you,
feel like
Brent. This
I'm
is so
being
fun.
and I look forward to continuing to collaborate. And I would encourage everybody, please reach out to Rita, connect on LinkedIn, say you heard her on the Raise podcast, and then leave us a 5-star review, which I never ask you to do, but just maybe this time.
Yes, I think that's a great. This was 5 stars.
All right. All
This is
right, Rita.
great. I love
Thank
this. Thank
you so much.
you.
With that, I'm going to conclude today's episode. Brent signing off with Rita Walters, who serves as Vice President of Development and Alumni Engagement at Montclair State University. From Mateer to Rita and beyond. Thank you. Take care.